A Difficult Birth, Easter, 1998. A poem by Gillian Clark. An old ewe that somehow till this year had given the ram the slip. We thought her barren. Good Friday and the Irish peace deal close, and tonight she's serious, restless, and hoofing in the straw. We put off the quiet supper and the bottle of wine we'd planned to celebrate if the news is good. Her waters broke an hour ago, and she's sipped her own lost salty ocean from the ground. While they slog it out in Belfast, 8 decades since Easter 1916, exhausted, tamed by pain, she licks my fingers with a burning tongue and lies down again, 2 hooves and a muzzle. But the lamb won't come. You phone for help and step into the lane to watch for the car lights. This is when the white coats come to the women, well-meaning, knowing best, with their needles and forceps. So I ease my fingers in, take the slippery head in my right hand, 2 hooves in my left. We strain together, harder than we dared. I feel a creak in the limbs and pull until he comes in a syrupy flood. She drinks him, famished, and you find us peacefully at a cradling that might have been a death. Then the second lamb slips through her open door, the stone rolled away. For me, this poem witnesses through word images the ways that birth, death, and resurrection all happen with great difficulty and miraculous ease. This is also the story of the Gospel of John. In John, what happens must happen. There is always a sense of the inevitable, that the choices that are made lead to only one place, conflict with the power, to new life in the community of friends, and to death because of each of these actions. All of this is difficult in John, and all of it happens with scripted ease. This, too, is the way that life is, easy and hard, difficult, painfully difficult, and miraculous. The poem, the gospel, and life are full of global and important things. The Irish peace deal, the struggle against empire, violent public rhetoric, and the attacks in Brussels and the Ivory Coast. The poem, the gospel, and life are full of small and inconsequential things. A sheep in labor, the grief of one woman, one name, Mary, the birth of one baby, August Hahn, and naming him after his Grandma Jan's grandfather. The way that one small conversation or encounter opens up something new, gives new perspective. Each of these, the poem, the gospel, and life, reminds us that nothing happens easily. There is always pain, always grief, and always the desire to give up. And it is true that miraculous endings are still possible, and they give us a reason to go on. We cannot go on, however, without changing, without living a new life. Before Jesus did that big thing, before he changed the world and arrived at the cross, he did a small thing that changed the world. He shared a meal with his friends. He used common elements of bread and wine. He participated in the shocking act of foot washing. Jesus suggested that with these common elements, this is what is most intimate. These elements are the flesh. And he suggested that we take them into us so that he becomes a part of us, a part of his body. In the days before we celebrate Easter, we celebrate communion and foot washing, this intimate act of sharing, of intimacy, of flesh. Before death and resurrection, there is birth and connection. And Jesus would suggest the taking in of the flesh of another. One of my favorite descriptions of this intimacy is by Sarah Miles in her book, Take This Bread. and it's become more meaningful to me since the birth of August. In that book, she reflects on the intolerable nature of sharing this intimacy, of taking in the flesh of another. As she considers the bodily nature of this act, she compares it to human reproduction. And she says, quote, "The entire process of human reproduction, if I consider it for a minute, is about as intolerable as communion. It sounds as weird as the claim that God is in a piece of bread that you can eat. And yet," she says, "I grew inside my mother the way my daughter grew inside me. I came out of her and ate her, just as my daughter ate my body literally to live. I became my mother in ways that still feel sometimes as elemental and violent as the moment when I'd been pushed out between her legs in a great rush of blood. And it was the same with my father. He helped to make me in ways that were wildly mysterious and absolutely powerful. Like God, he had gone inside somebody else's body and become a part of me. My parents live in me, body and soul, DNA and spirit. That is like bread becoming God, becoming me, in ways seen and unseen." End quote. This small act, this meal, becomes enlivened, enfleshed. And on Maundy Thursday, it sets the scenes for betrayal and ultimately death and resurrection and life again. After his death, after the cross, there was the other small thing, the gathering of friends and the journey to the tomb to see the body, to see the flesh and blood now no longer living.
It was not the safest thing to do, especially for a woman, to come in the early hours of the morning while it was still dark. But I needed to go. I needed to have time alone, early in the morning, to grieve, to sit, to pray, to figure out what had happened. I needed to lean hard against that stone that had blocked me from the one who had stood up to power, who had joined the ranks of people like me, who made himself like a woman, a slave, who washed feet and ate with undesirables. I needed to figure out how now the movement against oppression and hierarchy could continue without our leader. I just needed to be.
I have experienced grief, that need to be still, the need to weep, loss, death. It is something we all understand. Though most of the time we are encouraged to eat the right thing, exercise the right way, wear your seatbelts, and be careful. Be oh so careful. But death, we know, it always catches up. It is cancer, a car accident, a murder. Then, like the women and the disciples, like the friends of Jesus, we have to see death up close. And it's not just those personal experiences that remind us of death. It is the terror, the bombings, the refugees, the walls. These remind us that death can always bridge the gap. It can always find us. The story always ends in loss. When I worked as a therapist, nobody ever came in because they had doubts about death and loss. No one has trouble believing in death.
And when I arrived, the stone had been moved. The Pharisees had feared it would happen, and it did. The stone was gone. His body gone. All gone. All that I had come to do rushed out of my mind. I needed help to find the body. He had already had his body humiliated. It could not be further. I wouldn't allow it, but I couldn't do that on my own. I went back. I got Simon Peter and the one Jesus loved. They would help, and they did. Simon Peter was always slower, and I had already been there and back. The first to arrive, he went in and saw and believed. Simon Peter, I'm not sure what he thought, but they both left. I'm not sure. Maybe they didn't want to be arrested. Maybe they were going to find the body, but they both left. I needed to stay. Earlier I had come to spend time, so now I entered the tomb. It was brighter than I imagined, and through my tears I could see two figures. One asked why I was crying. It seemed to be a foolish question, but I answered them. They have taken him. I don't know where the body is. As I answered, a third person came up behind me and asked me again why I was crying. Why the same question? Oh, I felt so desperate. I felt such frustration. My heart was beating wildly. I imagined he was the gardener or some other worker. Either way, I didn't know if I should talk with him. I'd forgotten, disregarded, lived without rules of hierarchy for the past months as we practiced this new way of being. I risked talking. I risked asking. Sir, I said, if you have taken his body, please tell me where it is and I will take it. He smiled. Was it mockery? No, it seemed kindness. And he spoke. Mary. Oh, I recognized that voice. If not the body through my tears, he only needed to speak my name. Rabboni, teacher, I cried out.
I have been known by name. I have been called out of the haze of grief. I have met kindness. It is wonderful. It is terrifying. Craig Barnes, the author of Sacred Thirst, Meeting God in the Desert of Our Longings, says that death is not the frightening end of the story. He says Easter, the resurrection, is frightening because, quote, we get a good look into the tomb 3 days later and everything is unwrapped. Nothing is as we left it. Nothing is as it should be. Now we cannot even count on death. Easter has changed the rules. Barnes reminds us that if death is not waiting at the end, then everything in life has to change. We have to start over. We have to start a whole new purpose for life. The point of life, he says, is to discover a death-defying hope. This hope, I think, changes how we see ourselves. It changes how we live. What are you looking for? What have you found?
There was a change in me on a personal level. Hope replaced despair again. I'd experienced that while he lived and taught and now again, and I had a voice. I had encountered the one who changed the rules, including the rules about death, and now I could. I needed to tell others about what I had seen, about the living Christ I had met. I was able to give hope to the others, to the men who were despondent, who had no hope. It gave me courage to face the world of men and power. As the first witness to the risen Christ, others followed my lead, my witness.
I have been changed. I imagine that Mary is changed. She is the first witness. She becomes the storyteller of hope. She embodies one who was overcome by systems of power and becomes witness to the liberation. We are storytellers of that liberation. She lived in the oppression. We have to speak to the systems of oppression that we participate in. We need to become storytellers of justice. We hear our names, and we can move toward action. We, like Jesus, share intimacy. We share meals. We celebrate in outrageous and extravagant ways. There is no going back when all the barriers are broken down. If Easter matters, if the resurrection is real, if we are changed, we are no longer allowed to look at the world with apathy. Christina Cleveland reminds us that Jesus inverts the power structures and makes space for all people to flourish, and not just the ones who've traditionally held power. Commenting on the current political scene, she says, in our current times, the shifts away from white supremacy and toward racial equality are consistent with the new reality that resurrection promises and need to be met with hope, with courageous hearts, with supportive action, rather than through fear and existential terror. We cannot see big things, economic and social injustice, racism, xenophobia, patriarchy, homophobia, and not be changed. And we cannot see small things. We cannot see our own failings and our own lack of love without being affected. Transformation in this way means sharing the good news, being a witness, hearing your name spoken and speaking the names of others. And our personal transformation can be the transformation of a community, which is the transformation of the world. And that, my friends, is good news.